My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level. So honored for you guys to be here today. And at this point, if you're one of our kids in first through fifth grade, you're now dismissed to follow Justin Bieber out to Next Level Kids. Give it up for our kids as they head on out. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Love our kids. Love it. Well, I'm really excited for you to be here today. Some special things happening. We were very honored to have Bruno Mars lead us in worship today. Were you guys appreciative of that? Actually, his name is Victor and his wife is Erin, and it is the brother-in-law and sister to our worship pastor, Stephen. And if you missed the top three video at the beginning of the service, Stephen and his wife, Brooke, had their baby on Friday, and so they're at home. I think they got released today from the hospital, so we're very honored and thankful to have Victor and Erin lead us today. Also, some exciting thing happened around our church is our Haiti team came back last night about 9 o'clock, and they are all throughout our church today. They came back even though they got back late. They're volunteering, and they're here. And so if you want to hear about our Haiti team, find one of them. If you're new to the church and don't know who to look for the walking mosquito bites, and that's how you'll find out who was in Haiti, and you can ask them about the trip. I hear it was a life-changing trip, and I can't wait to hear more about it. Today, though, we are continuing a series. We kicked it off last week. It's called Movies, Modern Day Parables, and it's kind of become an annual series for us. We did it last summer. We're doing it this summer, and we'll most likely do it next summer. And the idea of this series is we're going to look at some famous movies, some clips of some movies. And the reason we're going to do that is because movies today mirror what a parable is. Now, if you didn't grow up in the church, if you're not familiar with the term parable, a parable is simply it is a story with a point. And last week we looked at that whenever Jesus taught a crowd, he used parables. Every time he taught, he would start off and teach them a story with a point or a parable. And he did this so often that his disciples were those that were closest to him. And it gets a little bit confusing if you've ever read through the story of Jesus. He has 12 disciples and then he has other disciples. There were hundreds of disciples. Disciple was just someone that was following after Jesus. He had 12 that were in his inner circle, and then he had a group of others that were kind of on the outside, and they left everything to follow Jesus. And this group of disciples comes to him after he tells a series of parables, and they ask him, what's up with all the parables? Let's look at that today. It says, the disciples came to him and asked, why do you speak to the people in parables? He replied, this is talking about Jesus. Jesus replied, because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. And let's stop there just for a second. Isaiah was a guy who lived hundreds of years before Jesus. He is considered to be a prophet, and that is, he spoke things into existence. He said, one day this is going to happen, and at a future point in time, it actually happened. He talked, he predicted the future. He would hear from God and say, hey, at some point, be on the lookout. This is coming, and this is something that Isaiah prophesied. Jesus said, you will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's hearts have become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and hear what you hear, but did not see it. So let's talk about what we just read for just a second. I don't know if you caught it or not, but Jesus' disciples, his closest followers, said, hey, what's the deal with all these parables? And Jesus gives a response that I don't think anyone in here saw coming. You would think that Jesus would say, hey, I tell parables to draw a crowd so that they could understand the secrets of the kingdom of God. But that's not what Jesus said. Jesus said, I tell them parables so they won't understand. Do what? What in the world's going on here? Why would Jesus tell a crowd who has come to see him stories that they would leave saying, that's a good story, but I don't have a fat clue what that's about? Why would Jesus do that? Well, he explains to his disciples, the reason I'm telling these parables is because this group of people who have coming out to hear me, they are a group that is just looking to be entertained. They're a group that is just looking to get some new insight, to say, oh yeah, we've gained some new knowledge, but they're not really looking to have their life changed. If they were really looking to have their life changed, they would repent of their sins, they would change their ways, and they would come follow after me. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give them what they want. Crowds come to see me, I'm going to tell them a story. And in Jesus' day, there were large crowds that were coming out to hear him. They heard he was a great storyteller. They heard that he spoke with authority. They were coming out to see the newest teaching. And they also heard that this Jesus guy could do miracles. And he was healing people and he was raising the dead. So people were coming out just to experience the show. They were just coming to be entertained. And Jesus was saying to his disciples, hey, listen, you are experiencing something special. Your eyes are being opened. Your heart is being opened. Why? Because you're not just here for the show. You're here to go to the next level. And how do I know you're here to go to the next level? Because you're asking me what these stories are about. You're not just concerned with being entertained. You want your life, to be changed. And I think it's crazy that Jesus was here thousands of years ago and the crowds haven't really changed. Today, in America, we have churches on every corner, especially in our area of Virginia, and many of these churches are filled with people. People have come to experience the show. But what would separate a group of people who say, yep, we're Christians, yep, we like this, we're here for the show, from people that are really Jesus' disciples? It would be those that are willing to dig a little bit deeper. It would be people that are not satisfied with just being entertained on Sunday. It would be people who would say, you know what? Yep, the pastor told a story and it was funny, but that wasn't the point of his sermon. What was the point of his sermon? Let me go apply it to my life throughout the week. It would be people who are not just satisfied with being entertained, people that are not just satisfied with the show, people that are not just satisfied being a part of a crowd, but people that really want to go deeper in their relationship with Jesus. And I long for a day that not just our church, but the church in America is filled with people that are not just there looking to be entertained by Jesus, but are really looking to have their lives changed. I think that would be an incredible experience. And that we're hoping that that happens through our church and spreads all around. We're not just concerned with our church getting it right or our church being the best. We want to reach people. We want to influence people. And I really believe that God can change the peninsula for His glory. And in this series, what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at some movie clips. And the movie clips are going to help us understand the story, because movies are very similar to the crowd in Jesus' day. Many people go to a movie and they simply want entertainment. They just nod their head and say, yep, that was good. That had good special effects. That had a good love story. That made me laugh. And we leave these movies being entertained, but we never ask ourselves, hey, what was the point? What was the story that I just saw? This is why the Transformers movies do so good. They have no story, but they look really good. They are awful. They are the Nickelback of movies. Sorry if you're a fan of Transformers and Nickelback. I'm really sorry. I'll pray for your soul. These are all just jokes. I'll be here all day. The point, though, is that movies today are more than just special effects. They're more than just good-looking actors and actresses. They're more than just jokes. There is a story in every single movie. And we're going to look at the story of some famous movies, and we're going to see how it illustrates biblical points. Today's movie is a movie that is considered a classic by many. It is the movie Groundhog Day. It stars Bill Murray, and it has been ranked as one of the greatest comedies of all time. In fact, if you're not familiar with the film, it's been considered the 32nd funniest movie of all time by Bravo's 100 funniest movies of all time. So Bravo, the network, ranked movies. It was the 32nd funniest. The Writers Screen Guild of America ranked the script as the 27th best screenplay ever. So the first category was just comedies. The second category, 27th best script of all time. That includes all movies, dramas, romance, everything. 27th best script of all time. Not only that, it was selected by the National Film Preservation Board for preservation in the Library of Congress in 2006. This is a really big deal. If you're not into politics and not into movies, this might have just gone right over your head, but this is a huge deal. The Library of Congress has actually preserved this film for its records. They only do that with a handful of films, and it is really rare to be done with comedies. But they saw something in this movie, and they said, we're going to preserve this. This is a classic film that doesn't just make us laugh. It tells an incredible story that has helped shape a culture. And so they've actually put it in the Library of Congress. The interesting thing about Groundhog Day is that when Groundhog Day came out, it was not an instant classic. The movie in 1993 made $70 million, which is a decent amount of money, but the number one movie that year was Jurassic Park, which made almost $300 million. So there's a huge difference between 1 and 13. In fact, many critics that went to go see this movie just kind of thought it was subpar or okay. I don't know if you remember the film critic Roger Ebert, but Roger Ebert, he gave it 3 out of 4 stars. But then years later, he revisited the movie in a series he was doing when he went back and looked at films that he had critiqued before. And it was The Greatest Movie Series was the title of it. And in that series, he re-looked at Groundhog Day and he said that he missed it. He said, like many people, in viewing it just one time, he missed the significance of this film. The true significance is found when you've seen the movie Groundhog Day more than one time. So I'm just curious today, how many of you have seen Groundhog Day one time? Okay, how many of you have seen it lots of times, multiple viewings? Awesome, okay. Only a few of you have never seen the film today. And so if you're here and you've never seen the film, and you go and you end up renting it this week or watching it, know that it gets better with time. So watch it maybe two or three times this week and not just once. But the film really is incredible. And if you've never seen it, it is about a weatherman by the name of Phil Connors. And Phil is a weatherman in Pennsylvania. And for the fourth year in a row, he is assigned to go to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania Thank you very much. I'm impressed with my saying of that as well. Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and he is assigned to go check out the groundhog, whose also name is Phil, and he's going to interview him to see if the groundhog sees his shadow. If he sees his shadow, it's six more weeks of winter. If he doesn't see his shadow, spring is coming sooner or something like that. I don't really understand everything about the groundhog, but that's what he's going to do. He's going to get footage of this, and he's miserable. If you've seen the film, he does not want to go. He does not see this as a boost in his career. He sees this as below him. He is not excited about this. And he's so not excited about this that he walks on everyone that goes with him. He makes fun of people. He puts people down. He is not enjoying this at all. He hates Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. He does not want to be there. He doesn't care about it. He is incredibly selfish and self-absorbed. In fact, after he gets done with the groundhog, he quickly tries to get out of town as quickly as he can, but he can't because there's a snowstorm. So he is stuck in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania one more night, except when he wakes up, it is not the next day. It is the same day that he just experienced. And he goes through that day and it repeats again. And so over and over again, he is stuck in this twilight zone where he cannot get out of the exact same day, which happens to be Groundhog Day. And this is where our first clip of the day picks up. This is a scene where he is realizing that he's stuck in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Not just stuck there, but he is stuck in the exact same day. And he is really depressed about it. And so he goes to the local bar to get some insight from some of the town drunks. And this is what happens next. Check this out.
You know, some guys would look at this glass and they would say, you know, that glass is half empty. Other guys would say, that glass is half full. I think you was a glasses half empty kind of guy, am I right?
What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same and nothing that you did mattered?
Yeah, that sums it up for me.
So Phil goes to get some advice and he goes to the local bar and he asks the two town drunks, what would you do if you couldn't escape this day, if you were repeating the same day over and over again? And one of the drunks just takes a shot and puts it down, and the other one says, yep, that about sums it up. And I think it's interesting that Phil is looking for some insight, he's looking for some advice, and he goes to the town bar. Now, this is not the point of the movie, and the point here is we're starting to see that who Phil is. Phil is a guy that sees the glass as half empty. He's a guy that is a little bit down. He's a guy that is not full of cheer and positivity. He's a guy that is a little bit of a grump, and he's an incredibly selfish guy. And he asks these guys for advice, and they give him some advice that I would not say is probably the wisest advice out there. In fact, this is not the point of the movie, but I just want to throw this out for free. If you are in a situation in life and you're looking for advice, probably the best place to go is not the bar. I'm just throwing it out there, just throwing it out for free. If you do find yourself there and you're talking to the town drunks, just take their advice for what it is. Phil actually likes their advice. And he actually takes it and he ends up riding with them and driving with them. And he asks them for more advice. And this is what happens next. Check this out.
Let me ask you guys a question. Shoot. What if there were no tomorrow?
No tomorrow. That would mean there would be no consequences. There would be no hangovers. We could do whatever we wanted.
Ah! That's true. We could do whatever we want.
Hey, Phil, if we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Phil.
I think they want you to stop.
Hang on. It's the same thing your whole life. Clean up your room, stand up straight, pick up your feet, take it like command. Be nice to your sister. Don't mix beer and wine, ever. Oh, yeah. Don't drive on the railroad track.
Well, Phil, that's one I happen to agree with.
I don't know, Gus. Sometimes I think you just have to take the big chances. I'm betting he's gonna swerve first.
I'm not gonna live by their rules anymore.
I noticed that.
You make choices and you live with them.
So Phil is in a car with the two town drunks and he's seeking advice from them, and he actually likes their advice. If you had to repeat the same day over and over again, what would you do? And they tell him that there would be no consequences, that you would do whatever feels good. And that takes us to Phil's worldview. He is stuck in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, repeating the same day over and over again, and he decides to live incredibly selfishly. He does whatever he wants, whatever feels good. And I just want to throw this out there. If you're looking for life advice, go to someone who is at the next level. Go to someone who has done something worth giving you advice. If you are looking how to better your life, don't go to someone who is at the bottom and doesn't have any advice to give you. Like, it would not make sense if you're going to look to lose some weight. It would not make sense to go to someone who has never lost weight before and ask them for advice. In fact, if you go to someone who is blessed with a mutant metabolism and you ask them how to lose weight, they will give you really bad advice while eating a fried Twinkie and just saying you just need to exercise more, which is not the case. And you'll want to punch them in the face, because people like that are really annoying, because not all of us were born with a mutant metabolism. That's a tangent that has nothing to do with this sermon. I'm just really frustrated by these mutant metabolism people. Here's the point, though. If you want great advice about finances, don't go to someone who has recently claimed bankruptcy. Go to someone who has their finances in check that can help you go to the next level. If your relationship is struggling and you want advice, don't go to someone who's in the midst of their third divorce. Go to someone who has a marriage that models what you want a marriage to look like. Go to someone that can actually help you out. Phil does not do that. He goes to the town drunks, asks for advice, and they tell him something, and he agrees with it. Yep, if I'm stuck in this same day, I'm just going to live life however I want. Well, he starts to do that, and he robs a bank, and he meets girls, and he sleeps with them just so he can sleep with them, and he goes out and eats whatever he wants because there's no consequences. But eventually, after living incredibly selfishly, he starts to feel empty inside, and he realizes that there's got to be more to life. And he transitions from being incredibly selfish to seeing how he can build a relationship with someone. And the person that he wants to build a relationship with is his producer. Her name is Rita. And he goes to meet her, hoping that she can give some meaning to his Groundhog Day. And this is the scene that we're going to watch next. Check this out.
Rita, if you only had one day to live, what would you do with it?
I don't know, Phil. What are you dying of?
No. I mean, the whole world is about to explode. What do you do?
I just want to know where to put the camera. What are you looking for, Phil? A date for the weekend?
No, I'm just interested in you. You know, what do you want? What do you like? What do you think about? What kind of men are you interested in? What do you do for fun?
Is this for real, Phil, or are you just trying to make me look like a fool?
I'm just trying to talk like normal people talk. Isn't this how they talk?
Close.
Okay, so talk to me. Let me buy you a cup of coffee. And a donut.
All right.
So what do you want out of life, anyway?
I guess I want what everybody wants, you know. Career, love, marriage, children.
Are you seeing anyone?
I think this is getting too personal. I don't think I'm ready to share this with you.
So here we get into the next act of the movie, and Phil puts his sights on someone else to try to build his relationship. He stops just looking at himself, and he wants to see how he can get to know Rita, because he has a crush on her. And in the next sequences of the film, if you remember it, he does everything he can to become her ideal man. He asks her questions about what she learned in college, and she was all about literature and poetry, and so he memorizes a poem. He finds out what she likes to drink, and he orders her drink for her. He uses every single day to figure out how he can woo Rita. And then in the film, there's a humorous scene, because it ends up the same way no matter what he does. Every single night, when he tries to score with Rita, he ends up getting slapped in the face, and it happens over and over and over again, and nothing he can do can change that day. And so eventually he goes from trying to pursue Rita to trying to take his life, because he was selfish for a while and he didn't find fulfillment in that. He tried to please himself and didn't find fulfillment in that. He went to then trying to find love and pouring some love into someone else, and he couldn't find fulfillment in that, and it leads him to try to take his life. And day after day after day, he ends up taking his life. And I think this is why so many people relate to the movie Groundhog Day. It's because we see ourselves in Phil Connors. We see ourselves in a guy who believes that he's destined for more than what he's doing. We see ourselves as having a dream, a vision of I'm created to do something more than just the monotony. I'm created to do more than what I'm doing here every single day. But like Phil, instead of achieving some greatness, we are stuck in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, doing the same thing over and over again. I love the quote that says, "The hardest thing about life is that it's so daily." And it's so true with us. The hardest thing about this life is not our problems. It's not that we can't overcome things. It is that in our minds, we feel like we have eternity. Especially the younger that you are. This is why we say things after gorging on food. I will start my diet on Monday. And then Monday comes and you can't start your diet, so you'll start it the next Monday. This is why we go through situations and we feel like we're addicted to something and it is ruining our life, it is ruining relationships, and we say, okay, this will be the last time. This is the last time I'm going to go here. This is the last time I'm going to do this. This is the last time I will act this way. I'm going to change now. And then we don't change. We find ourselves in a perpetual Groundhog Day where we repeat the same thing over and over and over again. We are stuck in life. We're stuck in life doing things like the laundry and washing our car and spreadsheets and dishes and changing diapers. And before we know it, we found all of our dreams and aspirations have started to go away and we just feel stuck. I am just living life for one extreme to the next, trying to find some meaning, and everything I have has just led to meaningless. In fact, I believe that if you are like Phil and you just constantly pursue things to better yourself and constantly pursue things in a selfish manner, I think you'll come to the exact same conclusion that Phil did, that life is meaningless. It is not worth living. And some of you might feel like it is worth it for a little while, but eventually when you get to the end of your life, you'll say to yourself, man, everything I've done, all the money that I've made is worthless. It is meaningless to be rich and not have someone to share it with. If you've just tried to collect experiences and it's been all about you and what you can get out of life, you'll get to the end of your life and you'll say, man, I've experienced some great things, but everything I experienced was meaningless because I have no one to share it with. Whatever you do in life, if it is constantly just about you, it will end up at the end of your life with you saying, hey, this is meaningless. And that's what it does for Phil. And the thing that gets Phil out of this rut, out of this Groundhog Day, is when he transitions from being an incredibly selfish person to a person that thinks about other people. And I actually think that this is a spiritual idea. For so many of us, because we're stuck in the monotony and because we feel like we have another Monday to change our life, we continually make the same poor decisions over and over again. It's like this verse in Proverbs. It's written by what is considered the wisest man ever. His name is Solomon. He says, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. First of all, that is just a gag nasty word picture. As dogs return to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Well, what is a fool? A fool is a person who knows the difference between right and wrong and chooses to do what's wrong anyway. That is not a person who walks into a situation and doesn't know what is right and wrong. That's what we call an idiot. An idiot just walks in the room and has no clue that it's going to end bad. No, a fool walks into the room and says, you know what? I should not be here. I should not go there. I should not drink this again. I should not eat this. I should not hang out with this person. But it feels so good, I'm going to do it anyway. That is a fool. And a fool, according to Proverbs, is a person who returns to their folly. And this is us. This is our perpetual Groundhog Day. And I think every single one of us, because we're imperfect human beings, we have a struggle that we feel like we just wish we could get out of it. We wish we could be like Phil and end up waking up from our Groundhog Day, because there is something that we just cannot beat. There is something that we return to, like a dog returns to its vomit. And today, what I want to do is I want to give you a verse that I think is the key to overcoming our Groundhog Day. In fact, I think you're going to see a lot of Phil Connors in this verse. It is almost as if the writer of this movie knew this verse and made a film based around it. The verse comes from Philippians chapter 2. It is written by a guy by the name of Paul. He is considered to be an apostle. He is one that met Jesus and it changed his life. And he wrote over half of our New Testament. And he writes a letter to a church that he started in Philippi. And look at what Paul says. And as we're reading it, I want you to think about how it mirrors the movie Groundhog Day. Look at what Paul says. He says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit." Now, Phil Connors is the opposite of the first part of this verse. He did everything out of selfish ambition and vain conceit. But look at what Paul says. He says, "Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross." So let's stop there just for a second. And let's talk about this verse. Eventually in life, if you do not transition like Phil did, it will lead you to say, my whole life has been worthless. It is not added up to anything. And for many people, that is the final straw that causes them to start thinking about taking their life. There is no future. There is no way out. It is over. But I want to walk you through the steps of what Phil went through that I also think is the steps that Paul is teaching us in his letter to the Philippians. And the steps are, is that when you are born in this world, you are born with a me mindset. This is the number one step in Phil Connor's life. He is me. He is focused on himself. And you can relate to Phil because you were born thinking about yourself. None of us had kids that came out of the womb thinking about their parents. Our kids are thinking about themselves. This is why they don't care that they've woken you up at 3 a.m. for 6 nights in a row. They don't give a rip about you. They don't care how tired you are. All they want is what they want, when they want it, and they want it now. We are born incredibly selfish creatures. We have to be taught how to care about other people. And for many people, like Phil, we never graduate to the next step. We are stuck in the me-only phase. And this is where you find people who are addicted to things in such a way that it is breaking down every relationship. And even though they're at the bottom, they're at the end of their rope, they will not change. Why? Because they find pleasure in it. They find joy. It is all about themselves. But if you stick in the me phase for the rest of your life, you'll find that it leads to meaningless. And it did for Phil. And so that led him to go to the second phase. And the second phase was me to you. Phil eventually realized that he needed someone to share his life with. He could not do this thing on his own, and so he put his eyes on Rita. But the problem is that he didn't stop being selfish. He continued to say, it is all about me. It is just about you meeting my needs. And the problem with this phase is you can have a really good life and a happy life and be stuck in this phase. In fact, I think most of us here today are stuck in the second phase. It is where we meet people and we say, okay, I think they could bless me, so I'm going to like them. We meet people and we say, oh, I have something in common. I like the way they make me feel, so I'm going to be friends with them. In fact, marriages can last for a really long time being stuck in phase two. And phase two is simply, I'm going to be nice to you as long as you're nice to me. And if both people in the relationship can love the other person, then the relationship will work out. But the problem is, as soon as the other person does something that you don't like, that you don't agree with, you're out of there. Why? Because they're no longer meeting your needs. And far too often in the church today, I see Christians who are stuck in phase two. It is phase two with their relationship with God. It is me to you. What that means is that Christians say, yep, I see some benefit from having a relationship with God. So I'll come to church, but God, you better bless me. I'll give a little bit of money, but God, you better bless me. And as soon as something bad happens in our life, we run the other way. Why? Because God is no longer mutually blessing us, and it becomes too hard, and it is all about me to you. But true meaning in life is not stuck in phase one or stuck in phase two. You've got to move out of that. And I've seen my kids move through the first two stages. I've yet to see them move to stage number three. The first stage is the me stage, and when my kids were babies, they were dirty, rotten sinners. They were selfish as all get out. But through modeling for them what it means to care about others and trying to help them, by the age of three, they've now moved to the second phase, which is me to you. And my daughter has mastered this. Specifically, when it comes to going to bed, my daughter hates going to sleep. She is a night owl. She would stay up every night till 10 or 11 o'clock at night if we let her. We don't let her. We have a bedtime for her. So at 8 p.m. every night, we put our kids to bed. My son falls right asleep almost every night. My daughter, though, she stays up. But she knows that if she can keep us in the room, it'll give her a longer period of time staying up. So she does everything in her power to keep us in the room. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a conversation with a three-year-old, but during the day, it is very difficult to talk to a three-year-old. Three-year-olds don't ask you, hey, how is your day going? Or, Dad, thanks so much for asking me about this. Like, three-year-olds just kind of, yep, and then they want to play, they want to do their own thing. And so we have fun with our kids, but there's not a lot of conversing back and forth. That all changes at 8 p.m., every night with my daughter. She becomes a 30-year-old woman and she wants to have a conversation with us. She asks us questions. Hey, Dad, why are my walls painted purple? Like, I don't have a fat clue. We had someone paint the walls. Well, what kind of paint did they use? I mean, she's going into all these questions. Dad, what is my nightlight made out of? Please explain. And she becomes this 30-year-old woman who wants to have this long dialogue. And because she knows she is selfish, she knows that I am there to benefit her. And if she can keep me in the room long enough, she'll get to stay up long enough. And after about a couple days of this, I became wise to it. And I was like, no, you were just using me. You need to go to sleep. I'm getting out of here. And she went to another level. She started saying, but Daddy, I just need one more kiss. Daddy, I just need a hug. Like, how do you say no to that? It's like, but she knows if I give her one more kiss, then she can say, Daddy, I need one more kiss. And she would keep going. She would do this until 10 o'clock at night if I let her. Eventually, I have to say, no, this is enough. You've got to go to bed. And almost every night of my life, it is the exact same thing. Reese, I love you. I've already given you kisses. I've already tucked you in. I've already answered your questions. I'm going to watch TV. Go to sleep. And I have to run out the room or she will keep me in there forever. Why? Because she is in the me to you. I benefit her. And as long as I benefit her, she will benefit me. She will ask for kisses because she knows I love when she asks for kisses. So many of us are stuck in that phase, but we will find out, like Phil found out, that there is not true meaning in life if you're stuck in phase two. You've got to move to phase three, and phase three is you to me. You to me. Phase three is what Paul is challenging us to get to. In life, consider other people better than you consider yourself. In life, it is not just about having a relationship because you want to feel good about yourself. It is saying, how can I better love you? In marriage, you want to take your marriage to the next level? Stop saying, hey, how can they benefit me? Say, how can I love them? Yeah, I would like it more if my wife did X, Y, and Z. But instead of asking that question, I'm going to say, what would my wife like more if I did for her? It is learning to serve the other person in friendship. If you want to have deep, meaningful relationships, it is not just about finding people who will meet your needs and be there for you. You've got to transition from having friends that you only call when you need something to having friends that you call just to be there for them. You've got to transition from phase one to phase two, and then you can't get stuck in phase two. It is the easiest phase to get stuck in. You've got to move to phase three. And phase three is when you say, it is you first. It is not about me. It is not about making sure that I am happy all the time. True happiness and true joy and fulfillment comes when I meet other people's needs. But Paul is pretty clear on this. This is not something that you can just say, okay, I think that's good. Let me just do this. Let me just muster up the strength and start putting other people first. No, Paul says you need to consider Jesus. Because what did Jesus do? Jesus left the perfection of heaven, and he left the perfection where of heaven where there is no cancer, there is no tears, there is no pain. He left that. Why? Because he considered your needs, and he put your needs ahead of his own. And he said, hey, I want to have a relationship with them, so I'm going to leave what is best for me so that I can become one of them. And Jesus put our needs ahead of his own. He modeled it for us. And Paul says, consider Jesus. Reflect on what Jesus did for you. And that will take you out of phase one and phase two and will take you to phase three, where you are living your life by saying, hey, it is not about me. It's about you. It's about me meeting your needs. I love the quote by Irwin McManus. He says, wholeness is simply giving more than you take. And the ultimate goal for us as Christ followers is to find wholeness in Jesus. And yet so many of us don't. We are born broken. We are born just completely messed up. From phase one, we are all about me. But ultimately, we don't want to be stuck in phase one. We want to become whole, and we try to do this through relationships, but we fall short because the relationship is still about us. But wholeness comes when you give more than you take in a relationship. Wholeness comes when you give more than you take from God. Wholeness comes when you give more than you take in friendship. Wholeness comes when you give more than you take in your marriage. The greater the brokenness, the less a person contributes to the relationship and the more they demand. Emotional wholeness is seen in what you can contribute to others. The spiritually whole consider more important than others, more important than themselves. The spiritually whole. If today, if you're saying, yep, I'm a Christian, I sign on the dotted line, but there's still some brokenness, if you're still feeling like you're not whole, what is the answer? Paul would say, consider Jesus and put other people first. How do you tell when someone is spiritually whole? When they are constantly putting other people first because they've considered what Jesus has done for them. And I want to tell you that if you want to escape your groundhog, whatever it is, whether it's an addiction, whether it's a bad habit, whether it's a personality trait, whatever your groundhog day is that is pulling you down, if you want to escape it, it is moving to phase three. And like Phil Connors, you'll wake up from your groundhog day. I guarantee it. Now, this is not easy. In fact, in my life, there are areas where I'm stuck on the me phase. And there are areas where I'm stuck on the me to you phase. But there are a few areas where I've been able to go to the you to me phase, and it has helped me find freedom. When I was 18 years old, I started working at a church, and I was an intern. And as a part of this being an intern, I was given a small group of guys. They were sixth grade boys. And I saw this as a huge ministry. I was really excited to invest in them and help them learn what it means to walk with God. And just a kind of fun side note, one of the sixth grade boys in that group was our worship pastor, Stephen Haggerty. That's how we met. I was his Sunday school teacher, small group teacher. And in this, this was my ministry. This is what I felt this was a big deal. God had called me to invest in these guys. Well, around that same time, our household discovered the internet. This was back in about 95, 96, 97, and if you can remember that far, homes didn't have the internet before then. Computers were just something you saw in sci-fi movies. They were huge things that bleeped and blipped, and you just thought, man, one day that would be cool, but you didn't have it in your house. But when you did get it in your house, you had to buy something called AOL. And you loved when it told you you had mail. And to get online, you had to wait about 35 minutes while it would bleep, 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 go through this whole process. And eventually it would get online and you'd be like, oh, the internet, this is amazing. You had no idea that in just a few years, everyone would have high speed internet. And not only that, we'd have internet on our phones. Well, we discovered the internet, and with the internet came an issue. See, I was raised in a Christian home, and I went to a Christian school. And so some people might say that I was sheltered. And one of those areas I was sheltered in is, as a teenager, I wasn't exposed to pornography. I went to the youth group where I heard people talk about and pastors talk about the dangers of pornography. So it wasn't something that I had easy access to. Now, I have friends to this day that have an addiction, and the addiction started because their dad showed them a magazine, or an older brother showed them a magazine, or they stumbled upon something. And that was not my story. It was not until my first year of college when we got the internet. And with the internet, we didn't know what we were messing with. All of a sudden, you would do a random search, not even looking for a pornographic image, and one of your options would be a pornographic image. And I found myself, my first year of college, going from not looking for pornography, but seeing it on my computer, to transitioning to saying, you know what, this is stuff I've never seen before. This is stuff that my sheltered brain has never even processed before. This is stuff that I like. And I went from accidentally stumbling upon it to actually searching it out and looking for it on my computer. And I would pray, I would say, God, I know this isn't right, would you just take this away? And the temptation never went away. The thing that changed my life was one day while about to search for some images on my computer, I had this deep thought in my brain and it said, what would you do if your sixth grade boys walked in the door right now? And I was heartbroken. I would say, I do not want to let them down. I would not want them to say, hey, your God is a fake. You've been telling me that he's real, that he can change your life, but you don't even believe it. I do not want to let these guys down. So from that point on, I stopped. That's what it took for me. Now, maybe that's not it for you, but I'm telling you, when I went from me only, this is pleasing me, this feels good, to saying you, then me, it gave me freedom in this area of searching for things on the internet. And from there, it's gone past my sixth grade boys. Now it's gone to having a spouse that I want to put ahead of my own needs. And I don't want to let my wife down, and I don't want to hurt her. And then from there, we've had kids, and I have a son. He's a 3-year-old son, and I want to model for him. I want to say, hey, listen, buddy, it is difficult in this world today to avoid pornography, but I want to tell you, with God's help, you can overcome this. You can stand strong. It is worth it to avoid it. I want to be able to tell my son that. I want to tell him that I've been able to overcome something. Not only that, I have a church that I don't ever want to stand up here and tell you guys that I have to leave the ministry because I've been disqualified. I'm not a perfect pastor. I've made tons of mistakes. But I'm telling you that right now, today, my love for you causes me to not make certain bad decisions because I don't want to let you down. And I believe with my whole heart that this is the key to finding freedom from our Groundhog Day. It is when you start to love someone more than you love yourself and say, hey, even though it is easier to be selfish and to feed my own need, I'm going to go from you to me. I'm going to not do something because I care so much about you. And when you consider that Jesus did that for you, it starts to change you from the inside out, and he gives us the strength to overcome our struggles. And I believe, like Phil woke up from Groundhog Day when he started meeting other people's needs. If you remember in the film, he went from being really selfish to walking around just meeting needs. He caught a boy falling from a tree every single day, even though the kid didn't thank him. And he changed these old women's tires every single day. And he went around the town trying to be a blessing to other people. And he went from being a me-only person to a me and then you to where he ended with the thing that got him out of his Groundhog Day is when he said, hey, it is about you only, even if it doesn't benefit me. It is about you, others first. So today, the challenge is that we would consider what Jesus has done for us and that we would start to find freedom from our own Groundhog Days, that we would put other people ahead of our own needs. Would you pray with me? God, thank you for this day. Thank you for your love for us. And God, we just ask that you would just give us some freedom, God. We ask that you would touch our hearts and that you would touch our minds, that you would help us to be a people that listens. You would help us to be a people that has open hearts to be receptive to what you want to say. God, we thank you that you love us, not based on our performance, not based on how good we are or how bad we are, but God, you love us because you love us. But God, I just ask that you would stir something in us that would cause us to wake up from our Groundhog Day, that would wake up from the monotony, that would strive to have an amazing relationship with you. I ask, God, that you would speak to our hearts and that we would find freedom, that we would go from being selfish people to people that put others first because of what you did for us. Thank you very much for what you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen.